Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Chanavalava Girivaradari Jaya Gopi Chanavalava Girivaradari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, which is entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 1. Sutta uvacha anartan sa upavajya svidanjana padansvakan dadmo daravaram tesham vishadam shamayan iva Sutta uvacha anartan sa upavraja svridanjana padansvakan dadmo daravaram tesham vishadam shamayan iva Sutta uvacha Anartan sa uparvaja Sridanjana padan svakan. Dadmo dadavadam tesham. Vishadam samaya ivam. Sutta Uvacha. Sutta Goswami said, Anartan, the country known as Anartan, Dvarka, Saha, he, Uparvraja, reaching the border of, Sridan, most prosperous, Janapadan, city, Svakan, his own, Dadmo, sounded, Dadavaram, the auspicious Kancha, Panchajanya, Tesham, of them, Vishadam, dejection, Shamayan, pacifying, Eva, seemingly. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sutta Goswami said, upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis, known as the country of the Anartas, Dvarka, the Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. Purport. The beloved Lord was away from his own prosperous metropolis of Dvarka for a considerably long period because of the Battle of Kurukshetra, and thus all the inhabitants were overcome with melancholia due to the separation. When the Lord descends on the earth, his eternal associates also come with him, just as the entourage of a king accompanies him. Such associates of the Lord are eternally liberated souls, and they cannot bear the separation of the Lord even for a moment because of intense affection for the Lord. Thus, the inhabitants of the city of Dwarka were in a mood of dejection and expected the arrival of the Lord at any moment. So the heralding sound of the auspicious conch shell was very encouraging, and apparently the sound pacified their dejection. They were still more aspirant to see the Lord amongst themselves, and all of them became alert to receive him in the befitting manner. These are the signs of spontaneous love of Godhead. Umakyan timarandasya gnanjana shalakaya chakshunun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati spa prantikam vandeham shri guru shri uta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana vaganatam vitam Tam sajivam, sadvaitam, savadutam, parijana saitam, Krishna chaitanya devam, Shri Radha Krishna padan, sahagana lalita, Shri vishakambitam scha. He Krishna karuna sindo, dinobandhu jagatpate, gopisha gopika kanta, radha kanta namostate. Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So as for the blessings of the assembled devotees, that we can say something for the pleasure of Shishi Radhesham, for the benefit of the devotees, and in line with Guru Parampara. Hare Krishna. So again, read this verse. This is Canto 1, Chapter 11, starting a new chapter. Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. Text 1. Sutta Goswami said, upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis, known as the country of the Anarthas, Dwarka, the Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. So I was hearing Prabhupada recently, and he was saying there's no need to study many books, that all knowledge is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want any kind of knowledge, you can get that knowledge by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. From very grand ideas and concepts to very also minute, small. Just like, you know, there's cosmic knowledge, there's knowledge about creation, there's knowledge about the Atma, who we truly are. And then in this chapter, and some previous chapters as well, the Bhagavatam is getting into the very fine details of personal relationship with the Supreme. So very big cosmic ideas about the creation, and then also just dealings, the nuances of relationship and the dealings with the Lord and his devotees. So very fine details are expressed in some of these verses. These are actually very intimate chapters. Krishna and his loving devotees. And just a little of the context. Shonaka Rishi, he asked a question back in the fourth chapter to Sutta Goswami. He asked about Parikshit Maharaj because he wanted to hear about the previous speakers and hearers of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So tell me about the life of Parikshit. So Sutta Goswami, he has this very nice quality that's glorified, and all devotees have this quality. Vakshe Krishna Kato Dayam, which means their words are always giving rise to Krishna Kata. Whatever the question is, whatever the subject matter may be, they have this very nice quality of it always turns back to Krishna. It always goes back to Krishna. Like Srila Prabhupada, so many morning walks and conversations, and whatever the subject was, whatever the question was, the quality of a devotee is they see the connection to Krishna. They bring it back to Krishna. So Suta Goswami, he's being asked about Parikshit and other things, but he has this quality of always bringing it also directly about the Supreme Person. So when he speaks about Parikshit, he starts from what? Parikshit being saved in the womb by Krishna. And then the next section, Kunti Dev's prayers. Kunti Dev offers beautiful prayers to Krishna. The next chapter, 9, Bhishma Dev, the passing of Bhishma Dev. Krishna, of course, was there. Bhishma Dev was waiting for that. Let's say, devotees explain that he was waiting for the sun to change courses and go to the north. That's an auspicious time to leave the body. But the real meaning that Bhishma Dev was waiting on the battlefield with so many arrows in his body. Every part of his body had an arrow. And he was waiting not just for the sun to go to the north, but actually to see Krishna. That Krishna would come before him and he could give up his body in that way. So, Suta Goswami is speaking about all of these stories, these devotees, and also the relationship to Krishna. So then chapter 10, we heard, we're just finishing chapter 10, which is Krishna leaving Hastinapur. And in chapter 11, Krishna is arriving in Dwarka. So two chapters, one he's leaving, and now one he's arriving. And when Krishna finally leaves, after the battle of Kurukshetra, he stayed a few months longer with his devotees to pacify his relatives and his devotees. He spent more time. Finally, he was ready to leave. And he approached Yudhisthira Maharaj to ask for permission to leave. You know, this is what's so amazing. This is, we somehow have to keep catching the wonder and the beauty of this, how Krishna, the supreme source of everything, how he deals so intimately and so sweetly with his devotee that he asks permission from Yudhisthira Maharaj. Do I have your permission to now leave? You know, we have to like step back sometimes and really see how wonderful and beautiful this is and appreciate it. It's like, you know, I'm from New York, New Jersey. I never see stars in the sky. So I remember when I first went to Hawaii for the first time and looked up, and it was unbelievable to see all of these stars. And also here in Alachua, so you're able to see sometimes when it's dark, you look up, you see the beautiful stars. And it's good, actually, I was thinking for parents to take their children. This, you know, children nowadays are so focused on their phones and the computer, but go and show your children the stars, because it's so powerful and it gives a kind of feeling of God consciousness. You see the order, you see the power, you see the majesty of that, those bodies, those planets in the sky shining. It does something. So, you know, and think about the sun in the sky. I was hearing that. What's the size of the sun? So we know that we have an idea of the size of Earth. How many Earths fit into the sun? They say 1.5 million Earths would fit into the sun. So just imagine the size of the sun. 1.5 million Earths would fit into the sun. And the sun, there's a being behind all that, the sun god. Right? Imagine the power of this being. Imagine if this being came before you, stood before you. We cannot even imagine, right? You cannot relate, you cannot connect. It's such a the power is so far beyond you that you have no ability to even take it in. And then what is the sun god? Sun god is just one servant of Krishna. Krishna, he's the source of everything, all of those planets, all of the suns, all of the planets, all of the living beings. He's in the heart of every living being. He's in the atom. He's in every single atom. Now, with all that power, the infinite wisdom, the infinite power, imagine that being comes before you and talks to you. And now imagine that being asks your permission to do something. You see, sometimes you have to step back and just see how beautiful and how wonderful when Krishna is relating with the Pandavas. We should be so attracted to this. We should feel the beauty of it. That's our bhakti coming out if we feel it, if we appreciate that point. All devotees relish this point because he's the all-powerful Supreme Lord behind everything, controlling everything. Infinite knowledge, infinite power, infinite beauty. And then he can also come right in front of you. And somehow or other, he's your size. You can look at him face to face and he can have exchanges. I remember Prabhupada once said that Krishna is bigger than the biggest and he's also smaller than the smallest. But most inconceivable of all is that he's medium size also. That is the most inconceivable. Bigger than the biggest, we can somehow, yeah, that's amazing. We can imagine it, we can just appreciate it. Smaller, he's inside the atom. But the most amazing aspect of Krishna is that he can be right before you, looking at you, relating, talking. That is truly inconceivable. So these exchanges with the Pandavas, we get used to hearing them and we just take them as sweet or ordinary, but they're actually inconceivable. There's this beautiful verse, jumping a little ahead to the 16th chapter. I wanted to read this verse just to go a little more into this point. This is 16th chapter, 16th verse. Saratya parashada sevana sakya dotya virasana nugamana stavana pranamam snigdeshu pandushu jagat pranatim cha vishnu bhaktim karoti nirpatis charanara vinde. It's such a nice verse. So Maharaj Parikshit, when he becomes king, he goes out into the lands, he goes on a tour. And he's also, just shows his how brave, because he wants to make sure, okay, I am the king now. If anyone has a problem with that, if anyone disagrees with me being king, then he's willing to go and fight. So he goes out all through the lands. But actually he receives nothing but gifts and beautiful presentations, and people are approaching and they're saying, you are the great Parikshit Maharaj. And they started glorifying him because of he's a relative. He's related to the Pandavas. And the Pandavas had so many exchanges with Krishna, the Supreme Person. And so this verse is a kind of it's Maharaj Parikshit's reaction to hearing those people talk about his relatives, the Pandavas, and their relationship with Krishna and what it does to him. So it says, Maharaj Parikshit heard that out of his causeless mercy, Lord Krishna, who is universally obeyed, rendered all kinds of service to the malleable sons of Pandu by accepting posts ranging from chariot driver to president to messenger, friend, night watchman, etc. According to the will of the Pandavas, obeying them like a servant and offering obeisances like one younger in years. So Parikshit Maharaj, he's hearing from people that how glorious are your relatives, the Pandavas. Even Krishna was, even though Krishna is universally obeyed by all, right? We all have to follow the laws of God. However you deny God or protest, we have to follow laws of nature, which are God's laws. So everyone is obeying. Everyone is obedient in that sense. But Krishna became obedient to the will, it says here, the will of the Pandavas. Krishna, we need you to be a messenger, a night watchman. You take this role, take that role. And Krishna is happily doing it all. And then this verse ends said that when Maharaj Parikshit heard this from others, he became overwhelmed with devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. This is what I love about this verse, because he's hearing of this beautiful quality that Krishna is controlled by his devotee. And what does it do to him? He becomes overwhelmed with devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. So in the same way as devotees, when we hear this beautiful quality of Krishna, that he's controlled by his devotees, we should think, oh, that's so beautiful. I want to therefore serve Krishna, that it awakens devotion in us. Let me serve that one who's controlled by his devotee. And this is a kind of, this is a dynamic of the spiritual world. Krishna wants to serve his devotees, the devotees want to serve Krishna, and they go back and forth. This is the eternal dynamic of the spiritual world, an exchange of love. So, when Krishna approaches Yudhisthira and he asks for his permission, and now they're seeing him off, he's leaving, and he relates to everybody appropriately. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he bows down to Yudhisthira Maharaj, because Yudhisthira Maharaj is his elder. Right? And with Arjuna, it's embrace, because they're equals. And with Nakul and Sahadev, he just gives blessings. He gives his blessings. So he's relating perfectly with everyone. This culture is very nice. This etiquette is very nice, because it sort of keeps us in check. It's the ornament of a Vaishnava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. This kind of etiquette, it makes a Vaishnava even more beautiful. And it also checks us from being inconsiderate or a little bit forgetful, negligent. We're very attentive. Oh, this devotee is senior to me. Therefore, my relationship is like this. Let me be a little careful. Let me be respectful. Oh, this is equal. Let me show friendship and love. Let us share our hearts in an equal way. And then this devotee is younger than me. Right? Or maybe this devotee is new, so let me show compassion and share and give something. Serve. It's all service. All different forms of service. But Krishna gives this example when he's leaving with the Pandavas. And so finally he's going off and they're following him for a long time. They don't want to see him go. So finally Krishna turns around at some point and says, okay, he persuades them, you can go back now. And it's very sweet, because they were protecting Krishna also. He's going off, we want to make sure nobody attacks. So let's accompany him. Of course, they know Krishna's God. Krishna can protect himself, but it's their loving exchange with Krishna. So he leaves, and then today we come to this verse where now he's arriving in Dvarka. So leaving and arriving. Again, this is the eternal rhythm of the spiritual world. This is the eternal rhythm of love. Separation and union. He's separating from some, he's uniting with others who were also previously separated with him. That's a special flow dynamic of the spiritual world and of love that's always going on. Union and separation. Sometimes it's hard for us to imagine the joy of separation, but it is also a kind of joy. It's a very mysterious thing. Ecstatic pain. Because a union we can appreciate. Oh yes, union, the joy of union. But in separation, the object, because it's no longer before you, the object of your love is no longer before you, then it has to manifest within your own heart to a greater degree, the consciousness of that person or that object. It sort of arises within your own consciousness. In one sense, it's even more intense that way. And all the joy of that consciousness is there. So we shouldn't get fooled and think, it sounds so painful, the spiritual world, I'm doing all this to become a devotee. And then we hear about the pain of separation and how that's always going on. It's inconceivable. It's wonderful. It's the most beautiful feeling. It's the other side of this dynamic of love. That's all. It's all love. So Krishna, he arrives in Dvarka. He comes to the border. And he sounds his conch shell here. It's being described. Announcing his arrival. So nice image. And he this pure white conch shell, he lifts up and he sounds his conch shell. And it's described the conch shell actually became reddened by the touch of Krishna's transcendental lips. This pure white conch shell became reddish. And the sound vibrated. And when the residents of Dvarka heard that sound, they became awake and alert and eager. And it's described a few verses later that they started running to Krishna. Soon as they heard the sound, they could recognize Krishna has returned. And they go running towards Krishna. This is why Prabhupada ends the purport. He says, these are the signs of spontaneous love of God. As soon as you hear that sound, that conch shell, you don't even think, you just run, Krishna. So the conch shell in Dvarka makes the residents run to Krishna. We know in Vrindavan, it's not the conch shell, it's the flute, when he plays the flute. But the same reaction with the gopis. They go running as soon as they hear the flute. So it's very, the gopis, it's even more extreme and more intense. No, nothing will get in their way. You know, the residents of Dvarka, there's this variety within the transcendental world as well. Even with Krishna himself, there's this variety with his different devotees and how they relate. So we hear about Dvarka, right? It's explained Dvarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. Three different places. It's all Krishna, but the feeling, the mood is a little slightly different in each. In Dvarka, they love Krishna. They have pure love for Krishna, but it's mixed with the knowledge that Krishna is God. It's mixed with the knowledge. They know Krishna is God. In Mathura, they also know that Krishna's God, but his form, he's that of a child, so there's a sweetness. He's not like a powerful leader like he is in Dvarka. So this element of sweetness comes into it. And in Vrindavan, they don't even know or believe that Krishna's God. They won't believe it. Even if they, you know, sometimes the cowherd boys would come back and say, Krishna killed some demon, they would tell their parents. And the parents would say, oh, these kids just exaggerate so many things. Krishna killed a demon. And sometimes when they saw that Krishna killed a demon, they would also have some reason for not believing that he's God. They say, maybe Krishna's being protected by Vishnu. Wow. Our little son is being protected by Vishnu. How auspicious, how fortunate. Or some would say, well, maybe he's some kind of demigod. But they'll never believe that he's actually God. Because that knowledge will interfere with their intimate exchanges. So how special, again, that this revelation of Vrindavan Krishna. This is actually the fruit of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, Jiva Goswami in one place, he explains that there are six Puranas that are in the mode of goodness, which means they take you from goodness to transcendence. And he said the result of all of those six Puranas is love of God. But the Bhagavatam, it's not just love of God that you get from the Bhagavatam, but you get love of Vrindavan Krishna. That's the real fruit. You know, the Vedas are like a wish-fulfilling tree with so many fruits. And Jiva Goswami explains the very top fruit, the fruit at the very, very top. Which, being at the very top, in a sense, it's inaccessible to us because it's so high up. But the devotees of the Lord, it's like, you know, that example that's given. When you have a mango, the way it's passed down, you know, from one person. So the Guru Parampara, they can take that fruit and pass it from one to the other very carefully, and it can come down to even such a fallen soul as me. At least the appreciation, the understanding of it. At least some, the revelation of it has been given to persons like me, which is incredible. So we handle it very carefully and with great gratitude in our hearts that this, even just to know about this, the fruit. So he says, the fruit of the Srimad Bhagavatam, all six of the Sattvika Puranas, they all give love of God, but the speciality of the Bhagavatam, love of Vrindavan Krishna. So, in Dvarka, Krishna is known as Purna, which means perfect. And then in Mathura, he's known as Purnatara. Right, it means more perfect. And in Vrindavan, Purnatama, which means most perfect. So, who would have thought that in perfection you have different levels, but the devotees have revealed this, even the most perfect Vrindavan Krishna. So, such a beautiful gift. And these verses in this section of the Bhagavatam is so beautiful. So he blows the conch shell, the residents of Dvarka spontaneously start running towards him to welcome him, welcome Krishna back. This is their reaction to hearing the conch shell. We hear it in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The sons of Dhritarashtra, they heard the conch shell of the Pandavas and Krishna. What was their reaction there? You want to remember how it's put? Their hearts were shattered by the sound of that conch shell. So the conch shell is melting the hearts of the residents of Dvarka. The conch shell is shattering the hearts. Why shattering the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra? Because they're opposed to Krishna. So it has a shattering effect, that sound. I was just reflecting on this because as aspiring devotees, we are attracted to that conch shell, that call of Krishna, but there's something in us that's also opposed to Krishna, and therefore it also has a shattering effect on us. We have both. We want to surrender. There's obviously some attraction. That's why we come, that's why we chant, that's why we hear. So some attraction. By the mercy of the devotees, there's some attraction that's awakening. But there's also, very deep in our hearts, there's a resistance to surrendering. And therefore, that also, that call from Krishna, calling us back, is also shattering in a sense of, can be a little painful, difficult sometimes to deal with. This is the root struggle. The root struggle of actually every living being, but some are conscious of it, some are not conscious of it. But actually every living being has this struggle in their hearts. Because the soul, the spirit, loves Krishna already, so that's there, that's our nature. But now, we've forgotten that. And there's something also very strong within us that resists Krishna, that resists admitting that Krishna is supreme and I am the servant. And therefore, the battle, the real battle, people are fighting so many battles in this world, but actually there, many people are escaping into those outer battles because they're not dealing with that one big inner battle within their own hearts. If that's not looked at or dealt with, then we find some outer. We project it out, and then this is my fight in life. This topic, this subject, these people, this organization, this system, all the fighting, all the battles go outward. But really, why does that happen? Because that one battle that we're somehow, we don't want to look it in the face and see what's happening. And therefore, we escape from it. And we find some other battle to fight. We escape. So, there is We're very fortunate because some attraction, reawakening of our attraction for Krishna is taking place in the sense of, yeah, we're devotees, we're giving our life to this, we want to serve, we want to serve Srila Prabhupada. He's reminding us of what we've forgotten. So that's happening. But still, we have to come, there's still a wall that's there too. And therefore, sometimes the message of Krishna consciousness can also be a little bit disturbing or painful, because there's a part of me that also doesn't want it. So I want it and I don't want it at the same time. Just imagine what kind of tension that creates within a person. To want something and not want it at the same time. That produces so much tension. Everybody's tension in life, that's the root of it. If that's dealt with, if that's faced, if one learns how to overcome, how to surrender to Krishna with love, then all your other problems will be gone. They may still exist, it's the material world, things will still happen, but you're able to deal with everything. You can deal with it all. And not get swept and destroyed by it all, because you've dealt with the most fundamental problem, the most fundamental issue, which is the unwillingness to surrender. And this is not meant to just make us feel guilty. This is just to know there are two opposing forces within me. There's a part of me that says yes to Krishna, and there's a part of me that says no to Krishna. This is the real fight in life. This is the real battle in life. This is where we should transfer the struggle. We have so many other struggles, the daily struggles. But we'll be able to deal with all of them if we give a lot of attention, nice attention to this struggle. And we'll do what we can right now in the material world, and we deal with things and there are different fights to be fought, but without losing sight of this real issue. The real issue within the heart of each and every single living being in this material world. Imagine, this is the war in the heart of every single living being in the world. Some are totally unaware, some are becoming aware, some are fully aware, some have finally surrendered to Krishna and made that change of heart. And then when a person actually surrenders fully. This is how the Bhagavad Gita ends. It all culminates in that verse, Sarva Dharman Paricchaya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. It all ends with Krishna saying, just surrender unto me. And so nice, Masuchaha, do not fear. It's a scary thing. We think I'm going to lose myself. I'm going to lose my personality in this world. But actually, the personality is the source of so much of our pain. This conditioned self that we're identifying with. So, we're afraid to lose something. But Krishna is saying, don't fear, just surrender. You will not lose. You will gain. Prabhupada says in one nice lecture when he's speaking about his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. And actually, he was telling the story that about taking sannyas. See, even Prabhupada in that story, right? He said, I had a dream that my spiritual master was coming before me. And he was saying, come. Come, you leave everything now. Leave your family. Take sannyas and you follow me. And Prabhupada says, I was horrified. Horrified. So somehow, you know, yes, I should do it. I want to do it. Why? Because of compassion. So the compassion can spread far and wide. The compassion of my spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta. I want to be that instrument. But also but I was horrified. It was a little scary to do so, to leave everything, to take that risk. But Krishna says, surrender unto me. Do not fear to take that risk. I will protect you. And then so in that lecture, Prabhupada says, so we think that if we surrender, we will lose. But he said, you will not lose. I'm telling you from my personal experience, you will only gain. You will gain everything. All your heart's desires will actually be fulfilled. The real you will finally manifest fully. You don't lose. You lose a conditioned self that's just conditioned at this part of the world, at this particular time, you pick up some conditioning and you identify with it. And then you fight with people of a different conditioning. Right? It's a kind of illusion. So when the soul finally awakens, when surrender takes place, then the spirit, the soul, the real self emerges. And maybe a little bit of that is coming out now. That's why we're attracted to Krishna. So imagine when it fully blossoms. How beautiful. How beautiful each and every soul is as a servant, as a pure servant of God. So surrender, we shy away and we know it's a process, but we shouldn't be afraid to look and see that resistance within my own heart. And okay, Krishna, show me the truth. I want to see that part of me that's also resisting you. Show it to me. Let me look at it. And let me know that in all my other dealings of the world, this is the real issue I have to face. And this is the real thing I need to overcome by your grace. So I'll get involved in all these other things. Maybe there's some duty I have to perform and some issue in this world. But I also won't lose sight. I won't escape into that issue and think, this is the problem. This organization is the problem. This person is the problem. You see, when you know the problem is here, the true problem, then you'll be a little bit more understanding of how to deal. The passion will come out of those other problems. We have this mode of passion because we don't see the truth. And therefore we put all of ourselves into other issues of the world. So we can deal with those other issues, but if you know the real problem is only within you, there's a resistance and there's a desire. Resistance to surrender and a desire to surrender. Let me see that, Krishna. Show it to me. Let me see it clearly. Let me face it. Let me chant, understanding this and taking shelter of you. That I chant with yearning in my heart for a change. Let me bring all of this into my devotional life, into my devotional practice. Let me think about this when I'm associating with devotees. That who am I to criticize or to judge when I have not yet surrendered my heart, surrendered my life. It's a process. I have to be patient with myself. But at the same time, you see, that's what we do. Because we're not dealing with it, then we become more critical of other devotees. And we become very judgmental and sometimes very harsh. Which is sad because as devotees, we're all actually trying for the same beautiful goal, the goal of life. Somehow it's been brought to us, we're aware of it. So wonderful. But we forget that every devotee is having this struggle in their heart, in their own heart. Every person that you see, devotee or non-devotee, is having that struggle with God in their own heart. That's the real issue. A struggle with God in the heart. Devotees, we're becoming more and more aware, conscious of it. We want to see it. We want to deal with it. We want to take shelter. We want to chant, praying for that shift to take place. Where we can remember again that I'm not the master. I'm not the controller. But I'm the loving servant of Krishna, the Supreme Master. That makes me happy that Krishna is the Master. Not jealous, envious, disturbed, angry. So, just some thoughts on this idea of how the conch shell, how it was melting the hearts of the residents of Dvarka, but it was shattering the hearts of the son of Dhritarashtra, because some are for Krishna and some are against Krishna, and therefore the conch shell has two different effects. And those two different effects are happening simultaneously within my heart. And that's the issue to deal with in life. That's where I should put my focus, my attention. Stay there, stay with that. Not overwhelming guilt, but just staying with that reality. That is the reality. It's not destroying me with guilt, but it's just, okay, yes, there is some, I have turned away, but I want to turn back also. Krishna, please, I beg for your mercy, that I can do this. And then one is addressing the real point of this, of the human being in the material world. This is what we're meant to do. So thank you. I'll stop here. If there's any comments, questions, chastisements.
Very beautiful class, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
And I love that inner struggle topic that you mentioned. And I think what I understood is the inner struggle is against our kaam, krodh, lobh, moh, all that. But I think that's not you are referring. You are saying that there's an inner struggle whether to surrender to Krishna or not to surrender Krishna. Mm. So when we are saying not to surrender Krishna means we have those external responsibilities that we need to fulfill. Is that we are...
No, I'm saying...
What exactly is?
On a little deeper level, that the not surrendering to Krishna is not wanting to give up this control of my own life, my own way. It's going to be my way. I want to live my way. I want to do things, you know. It's a self-centeredness, that I'm in the center. That's what has to be surrendered. I'm not in the center. Krishna is the center, and I'm the servant. So that's the struggle that I'm referring to. And all these other things like krodh and kaam, these are all symptoms of that bigger struggle. They're symptoms of a refusal to surrender to Krishna. So when you don't surrender, when you put yourself in the center, then all these other bad qualities attach themselves to you. Bad habits come, you know? It's like someone is addicted to, say, cigarettes or something like this. This is not really a sin, you know? It's not a terrible sin. It's a habit that was picked up because of a soul that's turned away from God and become very entangled, and all these habits get picked up. And for devotees too, we have sometimes bad habits that have been picked up and attached to us because of this turning away from our source and turning away from that relationship with Krishna. And then along the way, all these things get picked up and added to us, and like more layers of conditioning and covering. So we have to deal with those layers. We look at them, we try to adjust, but we should know that the real thing, the real knot in the core of the heart is that I'm in the center. I want to be in the center. Even I can be very polite and respectful and nice in life, but I'm still holding on that I'm the center. I actually do it for myself. I do it for a few people around me, which is an extension of myself. But to actually do it for Krishna, to do everything for Krishna, that's a surrendered devotee. They've crossed that threshold. A devotee, a pure devotee, has crossed that experience of realizing the resistance and then finally the surrender. So I'm not speaking about the, you know, little daily activities. Of course, we have to take it in that way. Everything, you know, there's the moment-by-moment surrenders throughout the day, you know? In little moments we have to surrender. Oh, what's best to do here? Oh, this would be more Krishna conscious than that, so I'm going to choose this. So that's a surrender. That's a surrender in the moment, in the daily moments of life, and we have to practice that. And also to be aware that there's a deeper issue at hand, and I also want to look at that even now. Maybe I'm not ready for it. Maybe it's too deep for me, but I want to see it. Krishna, show it to me so I can also see what the real problem is. So that one day, finally, therefore, atma nivedana, the real surrender means to surrender the self. You know, people think religion means you surrender some things to God. Surrender your money, surrender your objects, surrender this, surrender that. But finally the stage comes where, oh, it's me that has to be surrendered. I have to put myself on the altar as a sacrifice. You know, I give myself. This is Bali Maharaj, right, in Bhagavatam. He's the example of Atma Nivedana. And, you know, finally he realized, place your third step, Vamanadev. Where should I put my third step? You've taken everything. I've given you everything already. Oh, there's one place. There's one thing I forgot. Me. You put your third step on my head. You take me. I'm yours. So, I hope that's helpful in some way.
What a wonderful class. I mean, there's so much, you really gave so much, and there's so much to think about in the way that you presented it. Because you see so many difficulties between devotees because of politics or past history, all of that, and it seems like it can just be reduced to a test from Krishna, basically, that we have to try to pass by being observant, by being tolerant, and that really is a whole paradigm shift. If you look at it like that.
Yeah.
Because it's surprising, you know, how politics gets in the way. And I don't know, Facebook, but I've heard so much, so much fighting, and but just over that, what to speak of other things, and how unimportant it is in the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
I've just surrendered to Krishna, so anyway, thank you.
So thank you. Yes, when we completely forget Krishna, then we become dead serious over so many other things that are actually not dead serious. They have to be dealt with, you know? We have to figure things out and we want to arrive at certain solutions in the world. But when you become so fanatical and so crazed by it all, it shows that you're totally out of touch with the real issue in your own heart. If you just look within, right? There's this nice verse in the Katupanishad that says, all living beings, their senses are all outward, but then just a few wise living beings, they look within. A few wise living beings, they start to see, oh, let me look within my heart. Because everything happening in the material world is just our consciousness getting thrown in a large screen. You know? It's consciousness. It's all consciousness. The polluted consciousness creates the polluted earth, the polluted relationships, polluted politics. It's all coming from subtle to gross. It goes from a subtle place to a gross manifestation. So that one simple point, if we really reflect on it and take it seriously, we always return back to ourselves and our own consciousness. And we deal with the material world as needed in the best way we can think and we can choose and with the guidance of devotees, but never losing sight of the real issue. And once that is transformed within our heart, then you'll see everything very differently. We'll see with the eye of compassion and the eye of service, seva chakshu, the eye of service.
Thank you. Thank you, Ghanshyam Prabhu, for such a beautiful class. In your earlier part of your class, you were mentioning how Krishna is reciprocating. His personal aspect is being shown here, his dealings with the devotees, you know. And I was thinking, I wonder if it's just Sutta Goswami is giving us a little taste, because we hear that it's in the 10th canto, we see those loving exchanges with the devotees, but here we get to see that little personal touch with Krishna and his devotees, and I'm thinking that's very sweet. Maybe you have a comment on why that is there, that we're given in the very first canto such sweet dealings between Krishna and his devotees?
Yeah, it's there. These are very intimate chapters, you know. We're seeing the resonance and their exchanges with Krishna. This is where a devotee wants to go. I don't know the authoritative answer to that. Maybe Pran Govind Prabhu can help us, but I just know from my own understanding is that a devotee is always eager to go there. You know, we get into another canto, we're talking about the movements of the planets. These things are very difficult to kind of grasp. But ultimately, our method is to become attracted to Krishna. That's really our method. So all this other knowledge can be very helpful in so many ways, to see the laws of God acting in the world and so forth. But the real thing that I think is going to really do it is when we can appreciate the sweetness, but in the right way too, not like sahajya, where we're just, oh, we get all into it. But wow, so amazing that the Supreme Absolute Truth, he has a particular form that's very relatable so that there can be an exchange of love between he and his devotee. That's so amazing. So I'm so grateful, like that. Not that we just get into that whole thing, but we... So I think devotees, Sutta Goswami, and this is the deepest core of their heart, and therefore we're getting a little glimpse here. Pran Govind Prabhu.
Very nice class. I'm really very happy. I would like to hear more. I was contemplating while you are giving this dilemma of surrender. So I was contemplating whether surrender is built in with the protection, with the purification, or we have to resolve our issues and then surrender will take place.
Mm.
Like which one? Or so then I was thinking also that how one lecture Prabhupada mentioned that with one Indian gentleman who was arguing about surrender. He said, when I meet pure devotee, then I... He's telling this to Prabhupada. Mm. Of course, Prabhupada is very polite. But then he expressed such a nice way that actually to surrender to Krishna, it's a good idea. I mean, we all like that, we agree with it. But in practical reality, how it's relevant to me. Look at Radhanath Maharaj, just an example, or Indradhuna Maharaj. How, despite all this criticism, I mean, I don't want to say anything, but how they do not budge even one moment not to serve Prabhupada. Mm. And serving and following Guru's instruction is the real surrender to Krishna, practical. Mm. In case of you, you are following your Guru's instruction very nicely. Mm. That is the surrender. And when that surrender takes place, then that verse, Nijo Sartha Paran, Krishna Bhimukhan, Harer Maya Dandan, the whole episode of that when I turn away from Krishna, then I was looking for my own self-interest, then pad appears, means prestige, adoration, distinction, that manifested into six, lust, greed, anger. These are gradual. You explained very nice, I like that. But it reverses. Mm. Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur said that serve under a devotee. Mm. And those in ISKCON, we have those jewels, great souls, that I mentioned many of them. Mm. And if we some or other follow like them, under their guidance, then we are also going and experience this, not after death, now. Surrender to Krishna is possible right here if we can accept those pure devotees who has surrendered and they are exhibiting. They are empowered. Where is the proof? It says Krishna Shakti Bina Nahi Hoy Tar Pravartan. Prabhupada was challenged and Prabhupada quoted that verse. He said, empowerment causes perseverance. See them how they are constant serving, not even one moment wasting. But otherwise it stays with the idea. Mm. It's a good idea. We want to surrender, we want to think. Alright, Baba, there within us there are so many doing. Why can't we just be contagious by their association?
Mm.
Otherwise it will stay in the idea.
It's a great point, Guru. Like it makes everything practical. Otherwise, yeah, it's a very deep thing, the resistance to Krishna, and then I start to get worried, oh, how do I deal with that? Let me see. You want to be aware that it's there, but then the practical way is right in front of me. The devotees, the guru, right? So we don't have to imagine some deep surrender, final surrender to Krishna, but we see the devotees that are around us. We see that this is Krishna's gift. This is Krishna's way. He's given this way through his devotees, through the interactions with the devotees, through the service to the devotees, the service to guru. That's the link.
Yes.
So it's nice. It's a great point you're making, I think, because it helps us see that it's also very practical. It's right there. And so not to get too caught in the, you know, for me it's a good reminder. Because I like to kind of see all these deeper things, what's happening. And I know it's real, but I also have to remember, but the opportunity is right here, not somewhere else. Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Gaur Premananda.